Hi guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Today we have the legendary Mr. Ivan Balabanov joining us. So Ivan is a two-time world champion. He's a 14-time national champion. If this man is competing, he is winning, and I do not want to compete alongside him. So without further ado, we're gonna invite Ivan in. And today we're gonna talk about the power of play, possession games, chase and catch, and some tips for all you first-time IGP people. Let's get Mr. Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Whew, it always takes me a little moment to figure it out how to do this, but here we are.
Here we are, worth the wait. How's it going?
Oh, wow. That's a crazy question right now. So, yeah, no, things been really good. I just got back from a competition that was really nerve-wracking. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I have the students from my class are coming for graduation and certification this weekend. So they're going to just arrive from all over the place. And we have 3 days of, it's kind of fun times, but it's also busy times that... everybody's been studying, and it's final days of before they get certified. Hopefully everything goes well. So I'm just doing a lot of reviewing the testing and changing some things, making it more interesting. Damn. Not necessarily more difficult, but yeah, I'm kind of in a teacher's mode right now.
Awesome.
So, how you been?
All good. Happy that it's summer and the pandemic is coming to a close and normal living. So
yeah,
all good.
Yeah.
The recent photo that you shared, you with a bunch of trophies and a Malinois, classic Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Yeah. So that was really the, that was that competition. It was, I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, and we placed second, which I'm super, super happy. Sometimes people will be like, well, what happened? Why second? It's like, but that would be typical for people that don't understand how competition go. It's not always so easy. But it was a tough, very, very... I had last year two big competitions and we couldn't pass tracking for whatever reason. It was like this big mystery of, like in training, everything's going to be just perfect. He loves tracking. And then at two national championships, he just was like really weirded out about it. So that was in my head. And I went like 4 weeks ahead of time to... where was it? In Pennsylvania, just to do tracking and kind of play like the whole trial scenario to where somebody else will lay the tracks and I will have a few people with me, one pretending to be a judge and all this, just to try to recreate it as much as possible. And it was crazy because I still didn't know what's going to happen. And so... yeah, I focused all of my time in tracking because in my head, nothing else really was that important. Like I just needed to know if that's where I stay with this. Because as I said, like absolute mystery of couldn't really figure it out what's going on in his head and why. Because anytime we will be in training, he just makes like beautiful tracks, completely enjoying them. And then these two times he would go to the beginning of the track and be like, I can't do it. I'm like, what the hell? Just mind boggling. But yeah, we got an excellent score in tracking, which was amazing. And I feel really good about it, but it's still, it's still in my head. I still don't know. We have a big competition the one that I was at, that was the all breed competition, and now we have the only Belgian Shepherd competition coming, and it's going to be back in that same area, and it's in October. And I'm trying to think that we, you know, whatever that little thing in his head was, we kind of passed that, but who knows. And yeah, it's interesting. Competitions are always, you know, when you're not in the competition, you always look into scores and maybe watch the life of the day, how things are going. But there is so much going on to prepare and to make sure that you have this 5 or 10 minutes on the field, that everything has to just come the way you want it to come. And it's not easy, and dogs get injured. So I had a week right before the competition. I'm playing ball, of course, which we're going to talk about. But so we are at the tracking fields and we're playing, and it's raining, whatever. He just kind of gets twisted a little bit. So his shoulder, he starts limping. So I had to give him a break. Like the whole week before the trial, I couldn't do obedience or protection. I could, but then was like the risk of, okay, I can try to get more ready, but then he's going to be limping and maybe I cannot even compete altogether. So I know where my training is there. So I was like, you know, he can rest. All I need is a nice score in tracking. And yeah, we paid a little price for that. It was super hot. It was like 92 degrees or something when we were on the field. And I was just kind of trying to go through the whole routine. Of course, typically in training, I have a certain things that I would do right before, like the last 3 days. Like it's this really important kind of preparation. And once that's skipped, you got to go to plan B and plan C, which that's just the beauty of competition. That's kind of why we do it, I guess, because it never goes exactly how you want it to be planned, no matter how well you plan it. So yeah, he ended up going over the jump, and on the way back, he touched it pretty hard. And I want to think partially was me throwing that dumbbell a little bit too short, but also him not having that spring that he normally does because of the shoulder. So that was costly. And then in protection, he, you know, like in IGP, when they bark in the blind, then you have to call him, but the judge gives you a sign, you have to call him and they come into a heel position. So he was so happy that he's finally doing protection because of that little bit of a break. And I call him to come in a basic position, and he comes on the other side of me in a perfect basic position, but completely unaware that something is wrong. And that's, I mean, it's a funny thing now when you look back, but it's another kind of costly mistake. So yeah, competitions. It's so now we have a lot to do for the next one. But yeah, that's kind of behind now. Now I'm really just trying to focus on the school and the people that's going to come and going over all the tests and stuff like that. But we will be talking about play, I'm guessing.
Yes. So a transition into the power of play and the importance of play when it comes to establishing a good relationship and building a bond with your dog.
Yeah. So play is I can really talk a lot about it, and I'll just gonna kind of start talking and see where we go with that, and probably bounce back and forth in different areas. Play is it used to be even like 10, 15 years ago, that even scientists didn't pay attention, didn't consider play as important as it actually is to humans and dogs, as I'm gonna explain in a little bit. It's always used to be to where play is this thing that we do in our spare time. It wasn't anything of big importance, like this. Okay, we have nothing to do. Let's have some fun. Let's do some play. But there is a lot of studies, a lot of stuff that went on, and now we know that all mammals, especially like anything from a little rodent to a dog and a horse and humans, of course, we are actually biologically programmed to play. Like we have a need to do that. It's not like something that we need to, somebody needs to teach us. Like we can learn how to play games or how to do whatever activities, but the desire and to interact through play, it's, you know, it's in our DNA, if you want to put it that way. And all mammals, like I would invite anybody after we're done, for the people that are following and watching right now, go on YouTube and you can look at dogs trying to invite a statue to play with a stick, or a cow fetching a ball, or a dolphin in an open ocean doing for the first time, just some rugby player somewhere in Australia, I think it was, and I don't know, maybe they were just kind of a little drunk or whatever, but one decided that he's going to throw the ball for the dolphin, and the dolphin went and brought it back, and then he did it again, and then eventually they just ended up playing a fetch game with the dolphin just out of nowhere. And so this kind of shows that you know, play is something much more important than what we think. When you deprive, like kids specifically, if you deprive a kid from touch, that's going to be a really horrible for the development. I mean, that's going to be a probably the worst thing to do, but maybe the second worst thing, if not as equally horrible, would be to not allow to play. And that wasn't even a study. That's what happened back in East European countries, and specifically Romania, when they were under the communism, like in the late 80s and early 90s. Once the regime, you know, got removed, and they went to the orphanages and see kids that basically they were, you know, anything from infants to maybe 7, 8, 10 years old, cramped. And this, by the way, it's also on YouTube. I would encourage everybody that's interested in play to take a look at what a person would look like if he doesn't have such interaction. So they just don't develop right. Like, it's so important for development because it's a really interesting interaction. When you play, and the thing another thing with play is that for whatever reasons, humans, we have this unreal gift to come up with infinite numbers of games. Like, we can just, whatever, how many times I can toss this word and how many times you can, and so on. It's just like, we can just keep coming up so easy. We don't even need to just think so hard. We can come up with games nonstop from now to infinity. That's how we deeply programmed play is in our minds. And what is cool, especially about humans compared to other mammals, is that we don't, like let's say most of the mammals that play as youngsters, as they grow up, as they start maturing, their interest starts to shift in different areas. And even if they play to some level, it's not as when they were young. And there is some reasons for that, that we'll kind of touch on that too. But what is interesting, where I'm going with this, is that dogs and humans, we can play from the moment we can are actually able to play until we are gone, until we die, we love play. And that's something, you know, among many other things that really connects, and we really look at each other, dog and human, of like, you like the same things I do, and it's not like we grow up. We can, you know, you can play with a 14-year-old dog. You just got to be careful, because who knows what they're gonna break walking towards the ball, right? So it's a, you know, so like so many misconceptions about play, and one big one, even in some of the like the marine world trainers, like the orcas, dolphins, sea lion, even there, some okay, let me back up here. As I said, it's a biologically programmed, which means it's basically a primary reinforcer. Play is not something that you know, you need to reward with food. The play itself is biologically rewarding to you, and it's important to your development. And I don't know, some there is like, actually people sell, like dog companies, they will sell little tuck toys or balls where you can open it and you can put some treats inside to encourage the dog to play and basically get it rewarded with food. And that's it's pretty ridiculous idea, because you just completely diminish the value and the importance, and eventually later on in training, you also, when you're trying to maybe withhold rewards or manipulate rewards, if you don't understand what is a condition, what is primary reinforcer, you're going down a rabbit hole, and you know, of course things will work to some level, but will not work at the optimal. So yeah, that kind of comes from, surprisingly, the marine mammal trainers, they were very, and still, I mean, to as much as they can still do training, they would still reinforce the dolphin to go and do some trick with the ball and come back and get a fish. I'm not a dolphin trainer, but I know that you don't have to do that, or at least you need to understand that play doesn't need to be, you know, it is a primary reinforcer, is what I'm saying. So when you, like, when I'm talking about development and all the, I mean, endless benefits, really, but I'll just name few. Before that, I guess I should say that I divide, like, I've spent like all of my training being with pet dogs, with shelter dogs, like a sport dogs, everything goes around play. Of course, there is always room for other things. Sometimes people will say, well, do you ever use food? Yes, I do, but it's definitely probably 10% of the time, if I need to, but the main reward and the main activity really is play for me. Play. So there is a, like, I divide before I go into, you know, my games of chase and catch and possession games. I have to back up, and there is games, and then there is activities. So you can have a, you can kind of bounce a ball or pull on a rope, but there is not real purpose. And that's why I kind of call it activity. So like if you imagine what kind of, let's say basketball, hockey, whatever, but you take the goal or you take the hoop out of the game. And then unless they decide to come up with a different objective, how to compete or how to compare each other's skill and how to improve, then it stays on a level of some sort of activity that it's still pleasant, of course, but it kind of, you can just kind of bounce the ball and fade away and okay, I'm done. And that's that. To where games, they have objectives. And anytime you have an objective, you strive to accomplish the objective. So there is a goal, and that makes you improve. And when you accomplish a goal, what else happens? Your confidence boosts. So let's say a lot of times I will have, you know, when I give presentations or at the school, we will be talking about, well, what about a shy dog? What about a aggressive dog? And it's very important for a shy dog to, you know, it's one of the really easy ways to build confidence, because if the dog learns how to be successful and how to be good at something and understand that they are, that's an instant boost of confidence. And it's far more easy for the dog to understand than just giving food and telling him that he's a good boy. He's taking the food, but it really doesn't do much to grow and become somebody, as I like to say. So having these games, having objectives, makes a very interesting interaction between the dog and the trainer. And of course, like, you know, you can play with two balls, you can play with, you can make games super easy to where the objective is, there is not, how should I say this, there is not too much cooperation needed. It's like, you get that ball, well, I have this one, so you don't, you speed this one and you want this one. And we can go on like this without really having to agree on anything unless we make a specific point about it. But if we have one ball or one stick or whatever, one thing for me and the dog to interact through play, that means that we need to find some way to cooperate. Because if we don't cooperate, then the game goes down the drain, right? And that's one of the really, really cool things about games. Trainers often will get discouraged, frustrated, even upset at themselves or the dog, because the games that they want to play don't come naturally, and they're spending times and it doesn't seem to be happening, and they ultimately they give up and either butcher the game or completely abandon and go into a different style of training. But the beauty of play is not even the play itself as an end result, but the fact that finding a way, you and I, to agree of what the rules are, what the objective is, and what the consequences are for breaking these rules. So these three things, this is like huge, and it takes time. But when you have a dog that understands how to cooperate with you, when you've made a dog feel comfortable trusting you, you made a dog understand that there's going to be some guidance and that there's going to be some objective. This is how we play that game. And of course, in order for any game to get really good at it, there is rules. Because, okay, if whatever game anybody can think of, there is rules. Right after the objective being, okay, you're going to put the basket or you're going to, whatever you're going to do to win the game, that's going to be your objective. And immediately we have to have rules. But you cannot do it by running or kicking or pushing or so on. And rules, of course, as we know, are meant to be broken, especially when you really want to win a game. So then there is consequences for breaking the rules. And that lead to compliance, and that lead to agreement, and that lead to some form of discipline. And when I say discipline, I don't want people to start going way too deep in that, but there will be, in any game, you have an objective, you have rules, and you have consequences, penalties for breaking the rules. When all these three things can come together and we still are willing to interact, this is, in my world, far more important than having that, whatever, 10-month, 10-week-old puppy doing the sit down, stand, and a spin to the left, spin to the right, chasing food, not even understanding what it's doing because it looks like it's doing something, it's just chasing food. So it can be in such an early age that we can accomplish some major things of importance about how we interact and yeah, let me have a sip.
We had someone ask, have you seen a dog that just wasn't able to play? And I'm going to piggyback off that. Say if a dog in the early stages wasn't exposed to play, how do you go about teasing the play out of them?
Right. Yeah, these are the beautiful things about play. Now, there are times when the dog is either so traumatized or is so old or is from a certain breed that was bred over and over and over to where they basically really became just there is like if you don't want to play, you really don't have like any goals in your life because play is, in a way, it's competition and it's like everything comes from there. But having said that, there is times where it's not possible, but they're very rare. As I said, it takes patience. You need to reevaluate everything that you're doing. You also need to, you have to make sure that you are enjoying. It's not like, hey, here is the ball or here is the tug. You bite it. That's not inviting. And especially for a dog that doesn't see it as fun activity, you being so standoffish is not going to make him want to play. The cool thing about play is that you read, you get feedback and forth of your emotions and your desire to interact. And even if the dog doesn't join immediately, if you continue for a session, 2, 5, 10, and just bring the dog, but play by yourself, just, act like things are fine and you're having fun. And as I said, reevaluate what you're doing else. Like, for example, if you come back from work and you say, well, now it's 6 o'clock and it's time for us to train, because that's what we do. But if you're trying to accomplish something, you need to start not when you want to start. You need to look at the dog and you need to decide when the dog wants to do something. And that may take a while. But when the dog says, okay, I kind of feel like I have a little spunk, well, what should I do? And you say, well, I have an idea, let's go and do that. And that's kind of how it starts. As I said earlier, super important is that dogs that seem like they don't want to play, the trainer, instead of starting to feel frustrated, the moment you feel frustrated, dogs are super keen. And they're like, okay, he doesn't want to play. He's actually borderline angry at me for some reason. But it's for whatever reason, it's also bouncing a ball in front of me. That's not going to make it happen, right? So that's what I'm saying. You got to really put like some big Hollywood production and pretend that you're having the best time of your life in front of them. And then put them away. And then even when you put them away, don't try to be very sincere and very affectionate. And take time, observe. Pick the right time. Pick the time when the dog really wants to do something. Sometimes we also get so fixated on what we want to play with. And then we would buy this toy because this other trainer uses it and it's so effective. And then that doesn't work. And then we go to the next toy. And it's really not about, I mean, I don't want to bankrupt dog companies, but it's really not about what kind of toy it is. A few years back, I was giving some presentation, and these people from what was the name? Pennsylvania, the working dog. They have their breeding program. They do all sorts of detection and stuff. Pretty knowledgeable stuff going on there. But somebody came with a Dutch Shepherd, bred there, 8-10 months old, and they were like, well, he just does not want to play. And he comes and I'm like, okay, let's see what's going on. So he comes and he brings a little bag with all sorts of cute toys. I mean, everything is there. And he tries, and the dog is really like pretending that he does not exist. Like, he's not running away or anything, but he's like, there's no way I'm doing anything with you with these things that you're throwing at my face. And so we stopped for a moment. I had to kind of gather some history, get some questions answered that I have. So the dog is sitting down by us and we are talking, and he's explaining how, you know, he did the right things and the dog never really opened up to play. But I ask him, well, what about, like, is he just by nature? I mean, have you ever seen him like play bow? And, you know, it's a 10-month-old dog. Like, when you talk about play, you're talking about interaction. And if he cannot play bow, if you, for 10 months, you have never seen him play bow and invite you to do something or get excited when it sees another dog, then we have something pathological. And then something, you know, not quite right. And he's like, yeah, no, he would play with some of the dogs. And I see him, I mean, he's, you know, when the moment we stop interacting with him and trying to push him into let's play, he kind of curious looking around, and next thing he is chewing on a stick. I mean, like, it's not even like a, maybe something a little bigger than a straw, but he kind of has it in his paws and he's like chewing on it. So we know that that's not for food, right? It's a stick. But he's entertaining himself, being bored. He's not like, at least not making leak sores on his face. He decided to chew on a stick. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with him. I pet him a little. And he's chewing on a stick. And then he kind of laid down. He liked that I'm petting him. He dropped the stick. So I got the stick and I tossed it like maybe 5 feet, maybe less than 5 feet. Then he kind of looked at me and he went and he got his stick back. And to make it short, we ended up playing with a stick. And the point of the story, the obvious point is that, you know, play doesn't have to happen in the way you want it right away, at the time that you want it. Like, there is a lot that you need to understand and give in. It's very different than when we train by using aversive, when we train by using escape avoidance responses. Then it's like, no, you're going to do because I said so, and this is the consequences. But to make a dog play, you really need to make the dog feel comfortable with you, trust in you. All other needs have to be met. And then little by little play happens. But when you can play with a dog, you know that you're in a different place in your relationship with a dog from that point on. Interesting enough, the guy I can think of, well, I don't even need to say the name, but I cannot even think of it. He was like, try with this toy. It looks like a stick. You know, he has this, you know, the little rubber bone things. That it's not a, it's actually really a stick, but it's a rubber stick that PetSmart sells. Like, oh, I have this one. I'm like, why? Like, well, what's the urgency right now? We barely convince him that it's okay that I can interact with him. There is nothing magical about a certain toy. And in fact, the whole point of one of the really cool things about games is that you understand and appreciate the interaction and not really, you don't get obsessed about the object. Like, think of football game, basketball game, whatever, you know, the referee eventually ends the game. They don't just jump at a ball and have a big melee who's going to take the ball home, because it's not about it. And anytime you see this, when the sessions are ending, you know that there is things that you still need to work on, because the dog is not quite understanding that the toy is just the tool, the object that we end up interacting with. It's not something that really has this lifelong, I need to possess it and it's mine. Because if you do that, you end the game. There is no more game. It's the same thing when you watch two dogs and the one is younger and the other one is bigger and stronger. They know how to come down on the level on the young one to play. And they will even make them win from time to time. Because if they just grab the toy or drop the toy and snap at him, the other one's not going to want to play anymore. So, and this is the cool thing about when we talk cooperation. Endless benefits, including...
Wait, question. Did the owner eventually learn that he must unlock the play from within? How did that go?
So he came the second day. We kind of ended there. He came on the second day. I think it was like a 3-day seminar. He came and he was so excited. He's like, I tried in the hotel room, but he didn't want to play. But I'm curious to see if he's going to do now. And I'm like, okay. I mean, nothing wrong that he tried, because obviously, he's been trying for 10 months. If he tries one more time, it's not going to break anything. If the dog's going to play with me, he's still going to play with me. but he was so adamant to try with a toy. I'm like, okay, I mean, go ahead, nothing wrong. You can try. And the dog immediately shifted, like just the change of demeanor, just amazing. Refused. And then I called him. He came to me and I grabbed something, I don't know, like just a bigger, it wasn't a stick, it was actually a, oh, see now my English, what is called the peel of the tree, the, you know,
a stump, like
the core.
A birch,
I don't know. It's just like
a
part
stump
of the tree, maybe, yeah. And I mean, just something completely like you wouldn't think you will play with that, but that's all we had.
Bark.
And so I started playing and he decided he's going to play. And the play, of course, it wasn't like I throw far away and you bring it back and we do this over and over again. That was not the play. But I know we could get them. It's not that hard. Ah, bark. That's the yeah. Thank you, guys. And it was more of, you know, he's chewing, I try to steal it, then he moves away, then I take it, then I throw it, then, you know, a little bit of stalking, a little, just very gentle, just interacting and paying attention to each other. And so when I say paying attention, ultimately, you know, I mean, I advised him that it's, you know, pretty much what I'm telling you right now. You need to pick up the right times. You need to become sincere. You cannot force it. Play is not something that you force. That's the art about it, because you have to come to an agreement. What you have to force is the rules and understand consequences without destroying the cooperation of the interaction. So it's a very interesting thing. But as I said, we are biologically programmed. We are born to be capable to do that if we do the right things towards each other. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I never really heard back. And me with my life, it's this kind of common. I would go somewhere, I would help. And unless somebody comes back and he has more questions or I see them somewhere, it just kind of goes away. So I'm not sure what happened. But as far as I'm concerned, I know that the dog was able to play. He wasn't like nothing mental, nothing pathological. He just did not have the, like the approach, whatever they were doing was the dog just didn't trust and he had a big dislike towards. And this is, again, like it's in some way, the people that have dogs that play, you know, the kind of dogs that I'm talking about, that like if we are sitting right now here, they will grab the ball and they'll be just here and staring at you and just nudging it to you and you eventually will toss it, right? They will teach somebody that doesn't know what to do, they'll teach them how to play fetch with them. But then you have the other ones that they need that help and they it's hard for them, and this is where the really art comes to where when you teach a dog to play, it's easy if the dog is stressed in your training and he doesn't want to take your food and you're like, oh, I'm gonna change the treats, and well, he's not gonna eat, he's gonna nothing in life, it's three kind of things which I'm very much against. Hopefully we don't need to talk about that. You know, you can make a dog take treats from you. You can force him. That's, you know, he has to eventually eat, right? Same thing if we are using escape avoidance, using some form of aversive being, whatever, with a dish, with electric, whatever it is, and we ask him to sit or come, we will make him come. He will have no choice. With play, it's a different way of interaction. But if you can do that with a dog, the dog appreciates you on a different level. It's a very, very it really is on a very different level. Another benefits of games, like I will give you another story that just happened like literally 3 days ago. But I've sold a dog to somebody, and she's about 14 months old, and they're doing protection sports. And the person went to a few schools. I mean, he's very knowledgeable, but he wanted me to take a look and evaluate the dog. And I'm like, okay, well, let's do are there any concerns or what do you want to do? And he's like, well, I'm thinking to switch from ring sports to IGP, or I don't know. I'm like, well, why do you want to do that? So we went back and forth for a little bit. Eventually, I thought that I'm going to be doing some protection and test the dog and see what the dog is about. But he decided that I should look at how they interact and how they play. And of course, that's what we did, because I mean, obviously, that's what you need to do. So they come here in this. This is where I am right now. That's kind of my training room. And she walks in and she's full of life. I mean, just full of herself, just bouncing like a cricket back and forth. Just like, I'm like, okay, that's going to look really cool. And he gets one toy out. She kind of latches on the toy for a second, but then she lets go. Then another toy comes out. Then I start to see that it's what I call activity, how I was talking earlier. Like there is just no, like it's just everything is just energy that is constantly spilling all over the place. But there is no objective, there is no game. So nothing really goes anywhere. And I had to ask them how, of course, the part of the solutions, not just out of curiosity, but part of the solution is like what has been done in the past. Why do you think that's happening? Was it like this from the get-go, or what did the more knowledgeable trainer advised you, and so on? So the in a nutshell, yes, it was, she was always like this from a puppy, always interested in something else. Then the some of the really influential big names in the dog community would they would in advise to trying to find what the dog wants to do and kind of build from there. What is the dog favorite toy, or what is the dog favorite style of interaction, so they can build on that and eventually guide it somewhere, which is in a lot of cases, this could be a good solution. And what I ended up doing is just really let her show me what she wanted to do, because I tried to give her the one toy, she beat it, then she bit the handle, then she let go of it, dropped it on the ground, started to look at what else there is. And of course I have like seven bite suits and four racks of bite sleeves, and I don't know, I mean it's just a dog training room, so there is a lot of stuff that she's interested in. So I'm like, just let her free. And now she has all the choices, whatever she wanted to do, but I want to see what she wants to do, right? So she goes, she grabs something. I'm like, okay, let's play with that. She comes, she grabs it, and almost instantly, it's like, okay, I'm done with that. And then starts searching something else and something else. Every once in a while, dog trainers, for whatever reason, love to talk about dopamine. But it's quite confusing, and I don't want to really get into a big what happens in your brain and the chemicals, how they work lecture here. But she was a very prime example of what dopamine really is, like a dopamine junkie, because dopamine has a very good things. I mean, without it, we will not survive. We obviously need it, but it's not like the reward chemical that you search pleasure or whatever you want to call it. It's basically you are always chasing something in the future. You're never happy here and now. It's like, let's say I go and I win some championship, and maybe an hour later I'm like, okay, what now? And as I said, there is the benefits, but there is a lot of bad stuff about it, because you cannot stay focused, you cannot pay attention. And this is what I really wanted to mention. This is why I ended up talking about that dog, because what games teach you, even from a little puppy, which is super important when you have a working dog, when you're gonna interact, like in training, is that it reinforces or it teaches and improves the dog to be able to pay attention, to stay focused on the same task for a very long time. And some can do it very easy and some struggle with it. But it's not even only mental. There is a physical endurance and mental endurance. And we know that the moment you reach physical fatigue, of course, your brain starts to be more busy how to manage that, how to budget that deficit of okay, your fatigue versus focusing on the game. So the moment you physically cannot, that's why you're like not interested anymore to play. So mental and physical endurance are super important, and this is one of the best ways to accomplish it is through playing, not a treadmill, not bike running. Because treadmill and bike running don't focus on the mental endurance, right? So there's like really so many benefits of it. Another ones are, of course, even, I mean, depending who you talk to, even now I still hear, oh, you can should never ever, if you're some shelter trainers or some pet trainers, like play tug with your dog. He should never be biting things and whatever. But that's how you establish, that's like the smartest and the smoothest way to establish rank, to establish some authority, is through play. It's because when the rules are broken, then there is consequence. Then you have to learn how to accept the penalty and how to comply to the rules. And in order for me to be able to reinforce all that, but still maintain the cooperation and the healthy interaction, that means that I'm going to create authority that you're going to have to follow, but we're still best of friends. And that goes a long way.
When
And so,
you're training for the competitions on a daily basis, how do you know when to like cap a session, or how do you keep your own like mental endurance to make sure that you're keeping the dog accountable, or you're not overexerting the dog and
right.
the dog gets sloppy, let's say?
Yeah, so I mean, there's different, depending on the dog, you have to strategize, and normally they're a little bit different variations. But we know when we work, when fatigue comes in. And one of the good analogies that normally I talk about is when you have like let's say you go to the gym and you're going to work out and you want to kind of get healthy, stronger, whatever your goal is. And you hire a trainer, because if you don't hire a trainer, you never are able to push yourself in that way, and so on. And what a fitness trainer normally will do is they will kind of tell you, okay, do seven of these or five or whatever, and kind of watch you and pretty much don't care until they see that you're reaching that moment of fatigue. And then it's like, okay, now we start to train. Now you're going to make three more reps or five more reps of whatever that is. But this is when now the muscle and the body and the brain, everything needs to get this urgency and produce and get fit and improve. And so the same concept in a way I implement when I train. I would train, I would watch, I would, the moment I start to see being physical, being mental fatigue, I also kind of give breaks, like just mental breaks within the session. I'm not that big on short training sessions. I like to have a long session, but there are breaks to where we can actually really just have a sip of water or take 20 seconds to catch breath and then hear it again. But towards that moment when I know that no break can recover anymore, then I would stop asking anything. Like the actual work's gonna stop. Because I know now if I ask him to heal, he will do it, but it's not gonna be with that precision, with that intensity, with that joy. And I don't wanna give him the idea that I will be okay with him not giving me exactly what I need, right? Or even if I say, well, you're not giving me, I'm gonna force it. When you force it, it's not gonna look right. But so that's kind of the point of the training session when I would say, okay, I'm not going to ask you any more behaviors, but we're going to go into a little more play. And of course, for people that are going to watch that, I'm not suggesting that you overwork dogs, because especially dogs that are, you know, working breeds, like you can literally overheat and kill them by throwing ball because they would not know how to stop. So you know, you have to be very reasonable, but you certainly can work on building that mental and physical endurance, which is super important. Without that, you know, you're staying in this plateau. Just like, as again, as I say, if you're going to the gym and every time you go, you do whatever it is five times. You never really stimulate that body to improve, right? So that's another big thing that I would do when I play.
We have a bunch of questions about, well, a bunch of people that are just getting into IGP. Do you have any tips for people starting?
Yeah, like the really the best tip that I can give anyone is focus on play before anything else. It's almost counterintuitive, especially when you see all this. It's just such a norm to take some food and do all these things and make the puppy follow food or the old dog. You can do that at any point in time. And then, you know, you can take a 14-year-old dog and he will do just as a 8-week-old puppy. But for the development on a young puppy, play, cooperation, rules, consequences, attention span, physical, mental endurance, all those things are far more important to me. So, yeah, I have like the dog, well, dog, a puppy that I have right now. He's, what is he? Maybe 8 months old. It's gonna sound funny. He doesn't know how to down on command yet. He knows what he knows out. Because out is important, and the way we learn to out is super important, so we don't have any animosity against each other. But we can play forever, we want to play forever, no matter what time of the day or night it is. And I have to stop him because he will not stop. Then I taught him healing probably in a week that looks incredible right now. Like you can just go and 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 go. And there is no, like, I'm not holding toy or not making spin. There is nothing. It's just, I have built up enough of motivation and sense of cooperation and a feeling of what the objective is that just pushes through. It's just a matter of how to show it. And so he knows out. He has a beautiful healing. I just started to teach him sit like a few days ago. But everything's going to start to come extremely fast. And the reason it's going to come extremely fast is, again, I have cooperation. And he has motivation. He's kind of like a druggie. He's injected. He's done. He's mine. Like, he's like, please, let's play. All it takes now is to say, well, we're going to play if you do that little thing. And he's like, of course. And so, yeah, don't underestimate play. That's like my biggest advice for anybody. And it doesn't need to be IGP, anything that you do with dogs, even if you do shelters, if you do service, whatever it is, play by far is the most important thing in my world. No question.
What is your favorite thing to teach?
Oh. So, I mean, I'm very competitive and I'm very interested in I always kind of experiment. I always, you know, it's kind of having that beginner's mind. You always, and it's not even, like, I like the little challenges. It's not a specific, the things that I know how to teach really well, they're, you know, I'm going through the motions. And it's not to say that I don't enjoy it, but there is, yeah, we're going to heal and you're going to have beautiful attention and you're going to be wagging your tail and you're going to come really far. Like, these are the things that when you have the right dog and the right selection and you know how to make it, it's just a matter of time. But what is really interesting to me is the little challenges that come along the way. That's what keeps me motivated to even think of, well, that's not quite well working with you, does it? Let's think, what else can we do? And come to some agreement and then see, well, can it last? Is it gonna? So it's actually it can be in any area of dog training, but it's these little challenges. That's what makes me really look forward to training. But if you really, really have to push it, obedience is by far the most important. Again, it's because it's the interaction. Like, if you have the right obedience with a dog, that means that you have good communication and you can teach him anything else that possibly genetically that dog is capable of. And if your obedience sucks, then you can do other things, but you're gonna 100% rely on the dog's raw genetics because you suck in interacting and teaching. And obedience, I guess, it's the, you know, it's the mother of everything when it comes to dog training.
From Breezy Bear, how soon do you introduce consequences to a young dog learning the games?
It's a good question. So that's, and by the way, like, I mean, almost everything that we talk about right now, it's in the videos, chase and catch and possession games. So anybody that wants to go a little bit deeper into it, that would be a next thing to do. So consequences, penalties, punishment, whatever we want to say it, dogs don't really need a certain age to learn that. Again, I don't want to get too crazy. Like, this is something we talk when, like, at class at my school. You know, there is pleasant and unpleasant. When it comes down to the most fundamental principle on earth, it's like you avoid something unpleasant, you approach something pleasant. And again, we are programmed. This is like a, like if we don't have that, it doesn't life, you don't exist. And so what happens, you know, even puppies that cannot walk, they're already responding as much as they can in this way. Probably the very first time that they start to kind of be a little bit more self-conscious and actually able to do something about it, able to avoid something unpleasant, is in the litter box with mom. You know, if mom says you're done eating and you're just 3 weeks and you're barely stumbling, and she tells you, no, don't, done. And you learn how to go away. Mm-hmm. So consequences is not something that it's a, you know, human construct. It's not, we don't need to teach them, just like nobody needs to teach you if you, I mean, yes, I can tell you don't put your hand on the hot stove, but ultimately you will not listen to me, and you ultimately you will eventually touch it, and hopefully it wasn't that hot, and you learned the lesson. So bottom line, there is no certain age where consequences are. It's not like they are biologically ready to understand consequences. If you make sense, if it's all contingent, if you know, it could be a different story if, for example, I walk into my training building and I decide to sit on a chair and I get electric shock. I reach for my glass and I get electric shock. But then I reach again, but this time I don't. Then I touch this and just randomly I experience bad stuff that doesn't make sense. Then I would not want to come in that room anymore. And whomever else is in that room that I may think that has something to do with it, of course I will dislike them. But if it's only the glass, or if it's something that makes sense, then that's normal. That's how it should be. You know, that's kind of how, you know, electricians that work on those high voltage poles, you know, they don't go to work shitless like I'm gonna die today. They know what they need to do to stay safe and make big money. And it's, there is no, it's not an age is not a factor. Punishment is a very interesting topic, but it's not obviously, you know, it's a much, much deeper topic, but in short, it's a, any time really. As long as you make sense, and as long as you, you know, there is a big difference between experience brief pain, brief unpleasantness, or suffering. And if you know, like once you start thinking this way, you start to, you know, You have to make sure that you respect the animal and you don't do stupid things just because somebody else does it. But for a normal, healthy person, we are prepared to think correctly for those kind of things. There is, of course, a lot of clutter that, you know, we watch all the time, and including all the social sciences, you know. I had this really cool podcast, I think it was a couple of months ago, with these two brilliant people. And they talked quite a bit about this. It's just kind of how genetically what we do and what we don't, and how to respect what the dog offers and what it comes with, you know. So, yeah.
Earlier, we talked a little bit about how as humans, we can project our energy onto our dogs. When you are going to a play session and say you're not in that mood, is there any secret sauce, that the Ivan secret sauce that you have to turn on the magic of play, to get in the mood to have a great session?
Very good question. Yeah, that kind of depends how good of an actor you are. You know, that's why some people win the Oscars and some don't. And if you don't think you can win an Oscar, then if you're not in the right mood, don't do it. Just step out, leave it alone. Leave it alone, go do something else, jump around, sing, bounce, recover, get to it's a really big deal. You have to have good energy. You have to feel, you know, it's almost like a cliche, but it's not cliche. If I really talk to you deep about it, you understand that this is so, so, so deep. You don't mess around with that. Going back to my dog with the tracking, I think that was part of the big puzzle. He didn't really, he just like any dog, he keys and he's very connected, and he knows if I am in a good place or not in my head. And of course, when he's with me, he's like, well, maybe it's my fault for something and I'm stressing because look at you. And so, yeah, if you're not capable to act and win an Oscar, then just leave it alone. That was, again, with one of my friends at the competition, because as I said, I stayed like 4 weeks there up north and was hanging out with some of my friends there in New Jersey. And he was so good at it, like so good at it. Like there was a time where we will set up, we will go to like a little stadium and make the whole setup and everything. But there was some reason, and I can't remember, but he was not in the right mood. And he was like, I'm not going to do it. Then I'm like, man, I need to pay more attention. I need to be more careful like this. Instead of trying to, it's not even worth putting up, you know, the being the best actor. Like if you can go away and recover and feeling good, it's so, so important. Like I cannot, like I literally can talk to you about a week on how emotions and feelings and affect and stuff like that works, how the brain perceives things. Because it's even if I get some stomach upset, whatever, I ate something wrong and I don't feel good. When I don't feel good, my face, my body, everything, just my brain starts to work to try to manage that. But then I'm looking at you and I'm talking to you and we have to get excited to do something. And you're looking at me and you're like, no, dude, you're not excited about it. But it's not that I'm not excited about it. I just don't feel good. And of course, it all leads to the next thing and the next thing. And this is like, dogs can be so much more forgiving when you're in your happy place, so to speak, and you want to do. It's like, hey, let's go, let's have fun. That's when training is beautiful, and that's when it's enjoyable anyway.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
On that note, I would like to end this, but can you, I know there's a lot of people asking about, I don't know how much time you have, but I know you have so many videos on like teaching the owl and like your podcast. What do you recommend people go and watch and to
okay.
Follow?
Man, so like I am super selective on my podcasts who I invite to talk to. There was two that I kind of got stuck, and I'm sure most of you have listened to those two, unfortunately, because they have so many hits and it's about electric collar and low level conditioning and stuff, which just ended up being a pointless discussions. But if anybody that's interesting and everything that I'm talking about is of interest, I strongly would suggest to listen to really all of the other podcasts that I have. As far as videos on play, it's the for sure the chase and catch, the possession game, and teaching the out. The out is important because you cannot, you know, like when I want something and you want something and we were trying to play, but we end up in a fight, how to separate from that, things don't go well. So these are the probably the three video, like the cornerstone, if you want to call it that way, of my training. Chase and catch, possession games, and the out. And there is no, really no particular order of anything. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, they have been, I got them in January, and it's been a game changer for Rika.
Cool. How old is she now?
Rika is now 1 year and 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Growing fast.
Yeah. Her body's filling out, and it's, yeah, she's doing good. So,
Very cool.
Yeah. Ivan, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And I'll go ahead and listen to your podcast.
You will love him. I guarantee you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Have a good night. See you. Take care.